And that is number 061326, United States versus Reggie Golden. Good morning, Ms. Zion.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm appearing on behalf of Appellant Reggie Golden. The issue in this case is fairly straightforward, fairly narrow, and as far as I can tell, hasn't been addressed by any court. Mm-hmm. We're here to determine whether or not failure to report to jail should be classified as a violent felony under 18 U.S. Code 924E, the Armed Career Offender Statute. It's my position that to do so flies not only in the face of the clear statutory language, but would also dangerously broaden its impact way beyond that which Congress intended.
Of course, we treat escape by stealth as a violent felony. Is there really any principled distinction between escape by stealth and failure to report? Each person that we're talking about faces a certain term of imprisonment and obviously wants to avoid capture. How would the risk to law enforcement be any different in those two situations?
I think there's a huge difference, and the big difference to me is that a person who is convicted of escape is in custody. I think that custodial status is what makes an escape such a dangerous offense, and I believe one of the cases refers to it as a possible powder keg each time it happens, and that's because a person, in order to be convicted of escape, has to be in custody. A person who fails to report to jail has been sentenced to a jail term of 10 days or more and given a date to come back to jail and chooses not to come back to jail. You don't have this, because the case law requires that we not look at the facts of each specific circumstance, it is held that we can't say that escapes from a prison, you know, the traditional kind of escapes that you think of, we can't say that those are dangerous, but escapes, walkaways from halfway houses aren't. We have to look at the crime itself.
But then you've got the failure to report that constitutes a violent felony. So, I mean, isn't that closer to our situation here? Failure to report, like to a halfway house.
No, I think it's failing to return to a halfway
failure
house.
Failure to return. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You're right.
Yeah, correct. But you still have someone who is in custody. And so when someone's in custody and leaves, you're going to have law enforcement actively seeking to return them to their custodial status. That's what presents the danger. When you have someone who doesn't show up for their report date, to me that's a lot more analogous to someone who's been charged with a felony, given a court date for their preliminary hearing, and doesn't show up for court.
Well, what's the difference really, bottom line, between what you have to do here in this situation, which is capture a person who failed to report, and
recapture
what you have to do, you know, with someone, an escapee, which is recapture. I mean, you've got capture and you've got recapture. I'm looking for a principal distinction, and I'm having a problem.
Well, I think the huge distinction is that the failure to report, to me, is the same as when a warrant is out for someone's arrest. There's a warrant issued because someone is alleged to have committed a crime, and law enforcement needs to execute that warrant on that person and take
that person may not be found guilty.
What's the drag time between the time he was supposed to report and did?
In this case, what was the time? I don't recall the exact time. It wasn't long because he was pulled over shortly after he was supposed to report. I don't believe it's in either of the briefs.
He didn't voluntarily report. He just got pinched.
Correct. He got stopped on another matter, and
yeah,
they ran
that
his
was my
name.
Understanding, but I didn't know what the drag time was and how long he was wandering around loose.
I believe it was within a few weeks of the time he was supposed to report to jail.
Yeah, because he was indicted August 25th, and then the stop was September 3rd, so the warrant would have issued around the 25th. That would be I don't know for sure, but I would.
I do believe.
Unless there was an arrest warrant earlier.
You don't think they were looking for him during that period of time?
No, I don't. I think that when people fail to report to jail, a warrant is issued for them, and it sits out
there. They don't look for them, huh?
Not in Dane County, they don't.
Oh, believe me, they look for them.
It adds up to the, you know, and that, they figure next time they get pulled over, they'll bring them in on that one as well.
They get very nervous about people that don't show up when they're supposed to, and they start looking for them almost immediately.
In federal court, I know they do. This was, I think, a straight possession charge, so. I think that what we're getting to is a dangerous point, basically, where I could set up a scenario where a young teenage mother goes out, has a brand new baby, and steals on numerous occasions formula, diapers, you know, whatever to feed her baby. She's charged with 3 counts of retail theft. She's convicted of all 3, gets a 5-day jail sentence on each case consecutive. For the same reason, she's got this baby, no one to take care of it. She doesn't show up for court. She's charged and convicted of 3 counts of failure to report, and you've got someone who qualifies under the statute. I don't think that this kind of offense isn't the kind that the statute was looking at. The statute talks about a serious potential risk of injury, not just a potential risk of injury. I think any time a felony is committed, there's a risk of injury. Any time law enforcement goes to arrest anyone, any time law enforcement pulls over someone who's speeding, there's a risk of injury. But we have to look at the serious risk of injury. The language in the statute itself sets out examples of what it's considering: burglary, arson, extortion, use of explosives. Those things, those are huge. They're clearly violent, clearly involve serious potential risk of injury, not just a base, you know, not just a conjecture or speculative risk of injury.
Now, of course, he concedes that he definitely had 2 prior.
Correct.
Violent felonies.
Correct. He does. I think that if the court determines that failure to report to jail is a violent felony, that all kinds of other things are going to follow. I think bail jumping could easily follow. It's the same kind of offense as where you've been ordered by a court to do something, whether it's show up for court or follow certain conditions of bond, and you don't do it. And warrants issue for that. I think it's too dangerous. I think that in this case, his action is that of inaction. It's of sitting at home in jail, or sorry, sitting at home instead of going to jail.
So conceptually, you would say it's different because from a failure to report, in that one is an act and the other is an omission.
Correct.
I mean, that's one of the.
It's a big distinction. It's a passive inaction versus a very active cognitive decision of, I'm going to leave this place. I'm getting out of here. I don't care what it takes. The other distinction is, you know, of this versus other things, is that this is someone who knows what his sentence is. He's not out there worried about the potential huge length of sentence like someone who may be out pending sentencing. So I think that someone who is out pending sentencing doesn't show up for court, there may even be a greater incentive not, you know, to avoid capture. So,
thank you, Ms. Diane. Hi, Ms. Rumbelow. How are you?
I'm thank you.
Okay.
Rita Rumbelow on behalf of the United States. I'd first like to address the court's question to Ms. Diane. Based on the information in the pre-sentence investigation report, it's my understanding that in Mr. Golden's first conviction for failure to report to jail, he was supposed to report on December 27th, 2002, and then they actually filed the charge 2 months later. So I am gleaming from the record then he was arrested 2 months later for whatever reason. And then again, for his second failure to report to jail, he was supposed to report on November 16th, 2004, and he was charged January 4th, 2005. So each time he was out approximately 2 months. The failure to report to jail as a sentenced defendant cannot be distinguished from escape, especially escape by stealth.
A person who escapes, even by stealth, has already had a taste of prison life and has taken a tremendous risk to life and limb by leaving the facility. Doesn't that person seem more dangerous to law enforcement than a person who passively fails to report. And, of course, we have to look at it globally. I mean, a court has already made a judgment that the one who fails to report poses a relatively low risk, or he wouldn't have been allowed to remain out on bond after conviction. So why should we treat them the same?
Again, this court has held that somebody who is serving time in a halfway house is allowed to go to work on work release privileges and decides instead of going back to the halfway house that they're going to go to the local pub or, you know, mom's house for a home-cooked meal, wherever. Failure to report back to the halfway house is escape, and that's a crime of violence. So what has happened in both types of situations, there's been an adjudication of guilt. Whether it's the halfway house or the county jail, these sentenced defendants have decided, I don't want to be there. I'm not going to go. And in Mr. Golden's case, under the Wisconsin statute, it's an intentional act. He pled guilty to intentionally failing to report to jail. He did not want to be there. Now, in his case, we do know that he had had prior experience at the jail and in prison based on his other conduct. So we're supposed to look at the assessment of risk, not actual outcomes. And if you have somebody who has walked away from a halfway house or work release or Huber privileges to the jail and is charged with escape, and you've got somebody else who knows they're supposed to be in jail, there just isn't any distinction because there has been an adjudication of guilt. Unlike Ms. Zion's example of, well, you know, there's a lot of people out here who commit felony offenses, and because they've committed felony offenses, they're probably aware that there may be an arrest warrant out there for them, and they pose the same risk of danger. And I beg to differ. I think this court can draw the line where there is an adjudication of guilt. The defendant knows, you know, they sat through sentencing. There's no question here. They know where they're supposed to be. And they say, you know what, I don't want to go. I'm just not going to go. And so as Judge Rovner pointed out, there is absolutely no distinction between capture and recapture when there has been an adjudication of guilt and a defendant has made a decision intentionally not to report to that prison or jail setting where they know they are supposed to be. So clearly then under 924E, that conduct does present a serious potential risk of physical injury to another.
So your position would be even if the underlying offense was, say, the shoplifting offense, as she suggested, the fact that there's been an adjudication of guilt, that's the hook that we should hang our hat on.
Yes. Categorically.
In terms of stretching the rule or having it extend too far.
I would think that, you know, applying the categorical approach, we would never look to, okay, well, what was the underlying offense? What were they actually convicted of that led them to fail to report to jail or prison? It's just the categorical approach. You look at a judgment of conviction, and it states unequivocally, they failed to report to jail, failed to report to prison, that categorically is a crime of violence because there's just no distinction between that and escape.
So, prosecutors would, under all circumstances, bring this as a violent felony.
If the court rules in my favor, yes.
There'd be...
Don't tempt her. I mean, the real answer to this, the judge has got the... can justify a lower sentence if he wishes, can he not?
Well, under 924E, there is the statutory mandatory minimum of 15 years for the Armed Career Criminal Act. But the ruling in this case, though, I think would then also apply to career offender status. And so a judge could, if it's an advisory sentence versus a statutory mandatory minimum, the judge could take that into consideration.
Statutory minimums have always irritated me sideways, but you're stuck with, once you take adopt the position that you're urging, we're stuck with the fact that there is nothing the judge can do either.
Not if, right, if it's categorically determined to be a crime of violence. But again, I don't know how you can distinguish it from escape. It's the same. You've got a sentenced defendant who's supposed to be in jail or prison, and they're
not
there.
Ultimately, we wind up fall back on the use of the right to ask for it by the prosecution. That is, we rely essentially on the intelligence of the prosecutor, not to just because you're able to shoot somebody between the eyes to do so.
I don't understand.
You don't have to indict people. You don't have to bring charges if you don't feel like. As a matter of fact, if my educated guess is that about 70% of the cases that arrive in your office are declined prosecution cases.
I don't do the intake, and I don't get to make the charging decisions, so I don't
know. Unless you have changed since the time the three of us on this bench served as prosecutors, the declination rate is higher than the indictment rate.
Right. I think things may have changed some.
Right. 300 years ago, 200 years ago, 100 years ago.
But again, it's Mr. Golden made the decision. He made the decision. He didn't want to be there. In fact, he made this decision twice. He intentionally failed to report twice.
Let me make certain of something. Is this first impression across the United States?
I believe so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Go away.
And let me ask you this. What do you think that there's any conceptual difference between an escape and a failure to report in that one is an act and the other is an omission?
I don't think it actually is an omission. I mean, it's intentional. He's making so you don't take the steps towards the jail, but it's still an act, and it's an intentional act.
His best analogy is to the halfway house, where he's out walking around anyway and just doesn't come back.
Exactly. That's an omission, technically. I mean,
that is a violent felony.
It is, yes, under the current...
Under the current law, right.
Yes, and so there really is no distinction to be had when there's been an adjudication of guilt and the defendant has just said, I don't want to go. And why don't they want to go? Because they don't want to be in jail or prison, which again then presents the serious potential risk of whomever is going to, you know, be there to take them into custody, either recapture or capture. So intellectually, I just don't think there is any distinction. So I ask that you affirm Mr. Golden's sentence. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Rumbelow. Ms. Zion?
First, let me state that no one wants to be in jail. It's said throughout the brief.
Oddly enough, that's not true. There are institutionally oriented people that commit crimes just so they can go back to jail. So
I should say most average people
don't want
to be in jail.
The average person doesn't commit a crime, but let's say the average person certainly doesn't want to go to jail.
So I think that anyone out there who's committing an offense doesn't want to be caught, doesn't want to go to jail.
Yeah.
The case law requires us to take this categorical approach, where either a crime is or it isn't a violent felony. An escape has been determined to be a violent felony because lots of escapes are violent. You have people in custody. I was talking about this with a law enforcement person. He said, there's a big difference to us. Someone in custody.
We took care of that case with the guy who walks away in the halfway house and that sort of thing. In custody. He's out wandering around loose, and if he doesn't show up where he's supposed to, it's violent felony.
But it was held that way because of the requirement for the categorical approach. Because the courts are not allowed to say, this person, because he's at a halfway house, wasn't a violent felony, but we can't ignore all the people in prison who are escaping.
But see, we can't take into account what the police officer's, experience is. And, should this court rule not in your favor, clearly defense counsel, and I think the prosecutor is going to have a major warning to every defendant what this thing can trigger.
I think that the danger is out there of if it goes here, it's going to keep snowballing. You're going to be looking at bail jumping as a violent felony. You're going to be looking at scenarios where people who have never done a violent thing in their life are going to be looking at 15-year mandatory minimums.
Oh, don't you have to have three violent felonies before the...
Scenario I set forth earlier would have been three retail theft convictions. You have to have... If they were convicted of three counts of retail theft and didn't show up to serve the sentences on those, we'll be looking at a 15-year mandatory minimum. And I just think that just goes way beyond the scope of what was intended both
on the
face.
It just doesn't seem right, does it?
It doesn't. Thank you.
I know this was improper, but were you appointed?
Yes.
You were appointed? Thank you very much for the really fine job you've done for your client. And thank you very much, as always, Ms. Rumblow, for the fine job you always do for your office. Okay, case.